Welcome to the Conducting Artistry podcast, where we discuss ideas, techniques, and processes to elevate your conducting and empower your ensemble. I'm your host, Ingrid Martin, and in this series, we're talking all about repertoire selection and programming. In today's episode, we're talking about putting together a concert to create an emotional journey for our players and audiences. We're going to cover how to structure a concert and the different ways that we can shape the musical experience of our audience and different ways of planning out how to do that. So why is the shape of a concert or the arc, the journey that we take our audience on important? Well, as musicians, we are all interested in aesthetics and how the music makes us feel. That's probably why you got into music in the first place. You had an experience either as a player or a listener that made you feel something that you had never felt before. And this is the amazing power of music. This is why we do what we do and hopefully why we teach, because we want to impart and share that kind of experience with not only our students, but also the audiences for our ensembles. Our job as conductors, when we're selecting repertoire and planning out a concert, is really important in shaping how someone is going to experience that music. You'll feel very differently as an audience member if a concert starts out with something really loud and fast and energetic versus if something starts out with a very slow, calm, meditative piece that slowly draws you into what is happening on the stage. And that's just an example of what happens at the very beginning of a concert. So in today's episode, we're going to be discussing a whole lot of different possible shapes that you could create for your concert in terms of the emotional arc of the performance. We're going to talk about questions that we need to ask about our audience's experience of the performance, and we're going to go through a little process that you can use to check out and see if the ideas that you're playing with are working. So let's first of all talk about shape, arc, and drama. And what we're talking about here is the order of the pieces of music and the shape that that creates. So if you were to imagine that we condensed all of the sound of the concert, and maybe not just the sound, but the emotional energy into the size of a credit card, if you were to look at that sound wave, what shape would it be? And there are lots of different shapes that we can have. We could have a shape that starts off high with something really strong and then maybe dips down a bit to something a little less intense and then jumps back up again and then comes back down again and then maybe goes steeply up for a big finish. We could have a concert that builds throughout the entire performance time, so starting quietly and intimately and then building to a big finish. We could have something that looks like a parabola, so something that starts big, dips down, and then goes up at the end. The number of shapes that we can have are really endless, and it depends on the pieces that you've selected. But it's really important for us to think about this rather than just say, I'm going to put this piece first and then, oh, I might put that piece second and I put another piece third. We have to be intentional about how we do this because this is impacting our students' experience of the concert and also our audience's experience. And even if we're just conducting a school group and we have a pretty guaranteed audience of parents, family, and friends of the students in our ensemble, wouldn't it be great if they loved coming to the band concert and loved the musical experience that they took from that rather than just the I'm coming to cheer on Johnny in the saxophone section? So every time we play is actually an opportunity for advocacy for our program if we can create this immersive experience for our audiences. So we've talked about the many different shapes that we could have, but sometimes it's hard to start off with a shape. If you've already got a list of pieces that you're already planning for the concert. So in that case, it might be a case of moving around the building blocks, which are your pieces, and trying to work out what different shapes you could create with those pieces. So you could either start out with the shape and then find pieces that are going to fit that, or you can start out with the pieces and then juggle them to see what different kind of shapes are possible and what are going to work for your audience and your occasion as well. There are a number of questions that we have to ask ourselves pertaining to the experience of our audience. And we're going to go through these and discuss some possible responses to them. So the first question at the start of your concert is, how do we want to draw in our audience? What do we want their first experience to be when they come in? And this might be different if we're doing a performance in a concert hall that's well set up and we know that it's probably going to be quiet when we start playing, versus if we're doing a concert in the school gym and there's lots of rattling around. How we draw in that attention might be completely different. You might want to think of it depending on the piece and the energy that you want for the concert of what will grab the audience's attention. So maybe if you're in that high school gym and all the seats are clacking and there's lots of talking and lots of noise and there's lots of kids around, if you have something that has a really big dramatic beginning, that's really going to grab the audience's attention. Whereas starting with a slow piece or a quiet piece, let's say Yorkshire Ballad, for example, by James Barnes, maybe that's going to get lost in that environment. So bearing the environment in mind, how do you want to draw in the audience and what is going to grab their attention? Because we want them to be engaged from the first note, which could mean something fast and strong and energetic, or it could mean something that is deliberately drawing them in because they have to lean in to hear that very first note because it's so quiet, which is a completely different feeling. The next question to ask is, how will it feel between pieces when we're moving from one piece to another? And this has got to do with both what pieces we put next to each other, the sequence of pieces, but also about our stagecraft and how we train our ensemble in the stagecraft. So if you're thinking about the concert as this big arc, this big journey, then if there's something that pulls the audience's attention away from the music and the magic of that, then you're going to lose that sense of continuity. So if there's really distracting shuffling of music or lots of personnel changes of people standing up and sitting down, or maybe you have a MC for the concert who's not really understanding the journey that you want to take the audience on, all of those things are going to pull them out of the experience and you're going to have to work really hard to bring them back in again. So let's say you finish a strong piece and you have this big rah, 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 boom, crash, big, loud, fortissimo pause at the end of the piece. And then we hold the silence after that piece. What is going to happen after that moment? Do you want to immediately pick up the audience into a quieter piece? Or are you going to go into another strong thing? All of those transitions have different feelings to them. And you have to think about being responsible to the audience about how they're going to feel in that moment. The next thing to think about is, where is the point of most tension? And this might be emotional tension. It might be dynamic tension. They might be the same thing, but sometimes they're not. So where is the kind of high point, the big moment in the concert? Because we should all know where that is. That's going to completely change how we conduct our program and how we pace ourselves and our own gesture in showing that moment of greatest tension and energy. And it could be, you know, dark energy or it could be excited energy. It depends on the piece. And then across the entire concert, what is our point of deepest repose or quietness or introspection? And maybe that's a really quiet, slow moment in a piece, or maybe it's that silence in between pieces, or just before a piece is about to happen. And that again comes back to this idea of stagecraft. We are responsible for training our ensembles to sit quietly before a piece begins, to hold their instruments up at the end, and to hold the silence at the end of a piece. There's nothing more frustrating than going to a concert and you hear the last note of a piece played, and then the ensemble and the conductor have their hands down and their instruments down, and you don't feel like it's time to clap yet because you haven't had that chance to breathe out the impact of the music that you've just taken in for the last however many minutes it was. So thinking about teaching that, particularly if you know that in between pieces or the silence at the end of a piece is going to be the moment of most repose in your performance. The next question to ask is, what is unexpected and what is expected? So sometimes, and again, this will depend on the performance, there are particular expectations that the audience has about how something is going to go or what kind of music is going to be played. And sometimes it's in our best interests to follow those expectations. If there's a set formula for how a performance is going to go, maybe it's a functional performance, you're doing it for a Memorial Day or 4th of July celebration, whatever it might be. You just have your set way of doing that. There might be other times where we deliberately want to mess around with the audience's expectations a bit. So maybe they're expecting that you're going to play a march at the end of every concert. And what happens if you play October by Eric Whitaker at the end of that concert? Or maybe your audience always expects that you play the big chunky piece in the middle of your concert. And what happens if you move that to the end of the concert? Maybe your audience always expects an overture or a fanfare at the beginning of the concert. What happens if you start with a ballad that's really quiet in nature, like Sheltering Sky or Bloom by Stephen Bryant? That's going to create a completely different feeling in the audience from the moment that that first note sounds of that piece. And the last question to ask ourselves when planning what the shape of the concert is going to be is, how do we want to leave the audience? At the end of the last piece, how are they going to feel? Are they going to feel like they want more? Are they going to feel like they're perfectly satisfied? Hopefully they're not going to feel like they wanted less. And this comes back to thinking about the duration of our performances, which I think is something that's often overlooked by lots and lots of ensembles. Most concerts are too long in general. That's my feeling. And I get really frustrated when performances go for a really long time and you get to the last piece and you wish that the concert had been two pieces shorter. Or worse still, you're in the middle of the concert and you look at the program and you kind of have this internal groan of, oh my gosh, there's still two more pieces to go, or whatever the case might be. So think about how you want to leave the audience. What are they going to be talking about when the lights come up and they turn to the person next to them? You know, what kind of mood are they going to be in? Are they going to be contemplative and calm and they actually don't want to speak to anyone for a little while and they have to take a moment? Or do you want them to be jumping out of their seat and going, wow, how amazing was that? Did you see the percussion when they did that thing? What about those trombones? That was insane. So think about what that feeling is. And that is also important if you're planning a concert that has an interval. So how do you want the audience to feel going into the interval? Because although I guess it's unlikely, it is possible that people could leave at the interval if they really didn't have a good time. So you want to be very deliberate about what the piece is that comes just before interval, okay? And then also the piece that comes just after interval, because that's all going to be part of how the audience feels and what this shape is that we're creating for them. So I'll give you a couple of examples of different structures and shapes that I've used for concerts and what the answers to those questions were. So recently I did a concert called Love Wild, and the idea of the concert was to show the process of falling in love through music. The first piece was Bloom by Stephen Bryant, and it was this feeling of gradually falling in love and this feeling of blossoming, because bloom is about the opening of a flower, and we likened that to the opening of your heart when you fall in love. And it starts really quietly, and it was such an unusual start to a concert, and we really worked, it was with an orchestra, and we really worked as an orchestra to create this very intimate feeling that drew the audience in. And they played really quietly. It starts with clarinets, played as quietly as they could, and you could feel the electricity in the air of people listening for what is going to happen next in this piece. After we played that piece, we went on to a piece by an Australian composer called Catching Trains of Thought, which was supposed to be about that wild feeling that you have if you've just been on a first date and you're sitting on the train and you're replaying all the thoughts over and over in your head and everything's very chaotic. And so we had this chaotic piece, but it also starts quietly. So the bloom ended really quietly, similar to how it starts. And then the Catching Trains of Thought started quietly, but with a lot of rhythmic energy, and then came to expand as the piece went on. And then the next piece we played was The Dance On Number 2 by Marquez, which many of you will know. And this was our moment of seduction in our falling in love. And it starts also quietly and also with clarinet. So we had this link of things starting quietly with clarinet across the concert. And that gradually transforms from being this sultry, quite sparse texture, soloistic feeling to, you know, this wild party for the orchestra. And again, we had this great feeling of energy and elevation at the end of that piece. Big, loud, dramatic finish. And we had to hold that for a really long time, much longer than we felt like we should, to allow that to sink in for the audience. And then the last piece that we played was Howard Hanson's Symphony No. 2. Even if you don't normally listen to orchestra music, which we all should, I really encourage you to go and listen to this piece. It's absolutely epic. It has amazing French horn parts. It's very John Williams-esque and quite symphonic in nature. And that also starts with this really unnerving, quiet dissonance in the woodwinds at the beginning. And so again, we had this quiet start, and then over the three movements, it builds and ends with a really energetic finish as well. And so this was a concert that was planned over this idea of falling in love and this sort of stages of falling in love, with the Howard Hanson piece being this idea of going through lots of things with someone that you love, and this idea of commitment, which was what that piece entailed with all of its development sections and lots of interesting harmonic ideas and constructions. This real balance between tension and release. Another example that you might have of a concert journey is if you play pieces deliberately chronologically. So that might not actually have a deliberate arc in terms of the emotional content, but your audience is going to hear this and your players are going to feel this idea of compositional development through time happening. I'm currently preparing a program called Off the Wall, which is all music that is paired to artworks from MoMA in New York, the Museum of Modern Art. And there's currently an exhibition here in Melbourne, where I live, of works from MoMA. And we are following those works through from early modern era, late 1800s, right up until now. We're showing that through music, and you can hear as the pieces go on the evolution of compositional ideas and techniques. And it's really interesting. You can hear different instruments come into play, different colors used, different percussion, and that can be really engaging and educational for both your audience and your players to hear things happening in that particular sequence. You could also do that backwards, which would be interesting. Or you could go forwards in the first half of the concert and backwards in the second half of the concert. You might also have the challenge of a major work that you have, so a really big piece, and maybe you're playing it for a festival or a competition and you have a time limit and you don't have much time on either side of that big piece. This is a challenge I've come across multiple times, and it can be really difficult to find what is the work that you're going to pair with that. And I had this happen last year because for the orchestra I conduct, we only do 60-minute concerts. And again, that's very deliberate in terms of what experience we want the audience to have. We really want to leave them wanting more at the end of the concert rather than looking at their watch. We knew that we were going to play Chaik 5 in this concert, which is about 50 minutes. And so if we've got a 1-hour concert and we've got a 50-minute piece, which is this huge, massive, chunky piece of music, so much, you know, emotional turmoil and energy and drama, like, what do you put with that? What we eventually came up with was, well, you know, Tchaikovsky wrote this and he was older, he'd gone through a lot in his life. It's quite a tumultuous piece that's reflecting that, and it's his big thing. Let's pair that with something short and to the point that's by someone really young. Something that's this innocence of youth and then this experience of age, which ended up being the title of the concert, Innocence and Experience. And the first piece that we chose was Soirée Musicale by Benjamin Britten, which is a set of short movements that are very, very audience friendly, delightful to listen to, really beautiful. You should go and have a listen to them. And so we had this little gem that was paired against this gargantuan masterpiece, and it helped the concert really balance out, and it helped it make sense that we had a short piece and a big piece. Whereas, you know, if we'd chosen something that was 10 minutes long but it was also dark and brooding, then the whole concert would have felt really heavy. So we had this little, almost a palate cleanser, and then this big heavy Russian meal of Tchaikovsky. And that's the other thing too, and we've talked about this in other episodes, is thinking about the concert in terms of a great meal. So if you imagine a meal where you're having multiple courses and you've got the entree and you've got the appetizer before that and you've got the dessert after that, and maybe there's a cheese platter, and then you've got all the drinks that go with it as well. We have to choose repertoire that is going to satisfy our audience ultimately, that has a range of tastes and flavors and ideas, and it's about how those dishes or our pieces are sequenced that determines how the audience is going to feel at any one time during the concert and after the concert. So if you're interested in listening to any of the pieces that I mentioned in those concerts, or having a look at the programs and my annotations about the ordering and the reasoning behind choosing the pieces and putting them in that particular order, you can head over to the show notes at conductingartistry.com/podcast. And you can also get a link to the Spotify playlist to hear all those awesome pieces like the Howard Hanson Symphony. Now we're going to go through a quick process that you can use to check to see what your shape is and whether the transitions between your pieces work or not. And this is really simple. It won't take you very long. And again, we'll have a checklist for this process on conductingartistry.com/podcast. So the first step is, let's say that you've got all of your pieces planned out and you just want to work out what is going to be the best order for those pieces. So the first thing is to make a playlist in YouTube or Spotify. And it's really important that whatever platform you choose, you can put all of the recordings in it at once. That certainly helps. If you need to go between the two, you can. It's just a little bit more tricky. So make your playlist. And you might start by putting them in an order that you think is pretty good. Then the next thing you want to do is just scrub forward to the end of the first piece and play the last maybe 20 seconds of that piece, and then let the player transition into the start of the next piece immediately. Now, obviously, if you've got an ad playing on YouTube or Spotify or something, that's going to disrupt you a bit. If you can avoid that, that's great. So you want to hear just the end of one piece and the start of the other piece, and listen for what does that feel like and what does that sound like. There are some common pitfalls that you can avoid in doing this process. So one is avoiding weird key relationships in pieces. So just like composers do cool things in multi-movement works with having movements in a progression of keys or a couple of movements in the tonic and then another movement in this subdominant and a movement in the dominant and then back to the tonic again, we can do the same thing with our pieces. So you want to listen out for, I know, let's say a piece finishes on an F major chord. Do you want the next piece to start on an F major chord if it happens to be in the same key? Or does it sound really gross when your piece starts in E flat major? Do you think that that sounds weird if it's gone down a key? The other side of that is thinking about when you put tuning in your concert, if you do tune on stage, because it can be very, very weird to play, for example, tuning A, if you tune to A, and then to play a piece that starts on an E flat or something. It can be really quite jarring. So thinking about that as well in terms of keys. The next thing to think about is how does the tempo feel when you go from one piece to another? So is it really fast and then is it exactly the same tempo again? Which is kind of a bit unsatisfying, and it's that definitely goes along that question of what feels expected. So if you can not put two pieces that are the same tempo next to each other, that's really helpful. And the next thing is the volume. So do you kind of finish loud and then start loud again and stay loud? Because that's going to give a certain feeling. And if you do a lot of that, it can make the audience feel very tired. Or, you know, do you have one piece finishing strong and then another piece start really quiet? And that's a certain feeling which you may or may not want, depending on what you desire for the audience's journey through this concert. So keys, tempo, and volume are really important things to consider in your transitions. And they're also important things to consider in terms of the balance of the whole program. If we've got too much of one key or tempo or volume, it's going to make the concert feel really unbalanced, and it's going to be difficult for you to get the up and down of the arc of your concert. It's going to kind of all feel like a brick rather than there being a wave of different moods and feelings happening throughout the piece. We cover a little bit more of this in our other episode, so make sure that you go and listen to our episode on discernment, which is about finding quality repertoire, but also repertoire that is appropriate for the performance context, because the performance context is essential in you planning out how the journey is going to go, because every context is going to have different requirements, different venues are going to affect what is and isn't going to be effective for you in terms of that shape of the concert experience. You can also listen back to our episode on creating balance and contrast in programs, which is about picking the actual pieces that you would slot into your shape. And that's going to really help you with some more information about the different factors we have to consider in creating contrast. We've just mentioned a couple here today, keys, tempo, and volume, but there are a whole lot more that you need to consider more from a pedagogical point of view for your ensemble, but that also always translates back to our audience who we're playing the music for. So we have one action step for you today, and that is to go through this process of listening to the transitions and planning out the shape of a concert. So what you're going to do is take music that you've already selected for an upcoming concert or performance, even if it's only two pieces or three pieces, and you're going to play around with the order. So draw your little credit card size diagram of the shape of the concert, of the volume, might be one diagram. Or you could draw another diagram, which is the energy, which might be different it might not be the same as the volume. And then shuffle around those pieces and try a different shape. What happens if it goes down in the middle? What happens if it goes up in the middle? Do we want to have a big finish? Do we want to have a down finish? Do we want it to be really full on at the beginning, or do we want it to kind of emerge as the concert goes on? You can jump onto conductingartistry.com/podcast and download a little template that will help you plan out your concert diagram, as well as a few different examples of these shapes and some of the programs that I've put together that conform to these different kinds of shapes. So make sure you head on over there for the show notes and to get that free download as well. So I hope you've got some ideas about some different ways that you can shape and plan out your concerts that are going to create a great experience for your audience that is going to bring them back time and time again to your performances. Be sure to check out the show notes on conductingartistry.com/podcast, where you can also sign up for our mailing list and hear about future podcast episodes. And while you're there, don't forget to like our Facebook page and follow us on Instagram for our conductorgrams that we have coming out. That's all for today's Conducting Artistry podcast. So keep making great music and have a good rehearsal.